This is Crime Binge.
Welcome to Crime Binge,
the podcast,
where this week we are on episode 72 and we are covering the Hinterkaifeck murders.
Another international one.
Yes, we are going to bring you a German murder this year instead of a French one.
This year, yeah.
Just... that's where I'm at mentally, and it's only Tuesday.
Yeah, I feel that.
Whoa, I'm going to knock down the whole table. All right, very cool.
So, a little bit about the Hinterkaifeck murders. In 1922, the quiet farmstead of Hinterkaifeck went even quieter after the six family members inside were brutally and systemically murdered with an axe. Although this is already a horrible story, the horror continues to grow with the strange circumstances that lead up to the event.
Yeah, this is another one where there's just kind of weird things happening around the case, just in general, you know?
Exactly.
Like, there's always weird things, but this one just, I don't know, there's an underlying creepiness to this crime, I think.
And I think because there isn't a, like, definite
resolution.
Suspect. It's not totally solved. That yeah. It's, they're always like, because you know you have it in your head who you think did it.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
I have a big idea of who I think committed these crimes, but we will get into all of that later.
And again, since this is an international crime, just like last week, we apologize for the shitty way we pronounce these words very wrongly.
Yeah, we looked it up again in advance, but alas, some of them are still very difficult to pronounce even after looking it up.
Exactly. And I was thinking, I was like, you know, I'm mostly German. Maybe my German insides will help me pronounce these things. Yeah. But, like, I still can't even speak English, let's be honest.
Yeah, I, like... stumble over my own words constantly, so doing this is just truly terrible for the language. It's mutilated, but it's fine. We're gonna do our best.
Yeah, we're gonna try our hardest.
But before we get into today's episode, what are you binging this week, Sarah?
So this week I'm binging a YouTuber.
Okay.
And her name is Lauren Powell, but Lauren is spelt dumb. It's okay. Spelled L-O-R-Y-N.
Okay.
But I saw her on Facebook originally, like through photo or videos. And she's the girl who tests all of the different like seltzers and beers and stuff to like, she has a little breathalyzer and which one will get you to like 0.08 quickest, or how many drinks of White Claw does it take to get you to 0.08. Mm-hmm. And she does a bunch of other like drinking hacks and stuff like that. But then I learned she's also part of a like conglomerate YouTube channel called Clever Style, which is a part of Smosh. Mm-hmm. And on there it's like six girls, I think, and they do a bunch of like fashion videos and stuff like that.
Yeah,
obviously it's called Style, Clever Style. So, yeah, I've just been watching, like, everything that includes her this week, and I am also, I consider myself a hard seltzer aficionado, so I've been really interested in, like, which ones have the most, like, alcohol content, and it's just fascinating, and it's also entertaining to watch her get drunk and just, like, dance drunkly.
Yeah. That sounds fun. I have not seen her videos at all.
She's real cute.
I believe you. I just don't know who that person is.
All right. Well, what is your binge this week, Morgan?
My binge this week is going to be Ariana Grande's new album, Positions.
Hell yeah, because it's good as hell.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever fully listened to an Ariana Grande album before. Mm-hmm. But I have been listening to it while I work, and it's fun. I like it. I do need her to enunciate more. I know that's like her whole shtick, but sometimes I'm just like, I don't know what's happening. I need to look up this lyric. And some of her lyrics confuse me. Like, in her one song, she says, you're going to need a seatbelt while I ride it.
Yes.
And I just don't understand what that means. But every time I hear it, it makes me laugh.
Yeah. That song, 3435, has been on the radio, and I've been jamming the hell out of it lately.
Yeah. I think my favorite song right now is Just Like Magic, because that one's, like, just a fun, upbeat one. But the whole thing is pretty fun.
Yeah, I know she does one with Dua Lipa that I like, but I can't remember the name of it.
I don't know. There's one with Doja Cat as well, which mm-hmm. is good. Motive, and that one's fun. But yeah, it's just like a good dance around album, like put it on and clean your house type of thing too.
Yeah.
So you have something upbeat. So it's fun. I like it. Nice. Thanks, Ariana Grande. I don't know what
I love you.
All right. Enough about our binges. Should we just get into today's episode?
We should.
Okay.
All right. So this story takes place in a small Bavarian town outside of Groben. Already messed stuff up. In Germany, obviously. The town itself is called Kaifek, and the farmstead is about a half mile behind this town, or in the Hinters, which yeah. means behind, therefore granting the name of the farm Hinterkaifeck.
Yeah.
So, Andreas Gruber, who is 63, owned this area, and it was described as a lonesome place. He lived here with his wife, Kazilia Gruber, who is 72, their widowed daughter Victoria Gabriel, who is 35, and then her children, who her oldest was a girl named after the grandmother, Kazilia, who was 7, and a boy, Joseph, who was 2. And although this was like a well-known farm in the area, the family itself was not very well liked by the rest of the town. They liked to keep to themselves, and it was very well known that Andreas was an abusive man towards his wife and children. And he did have other children besides Victoria, but she was the only remaining living child, and it is speculated that his other children died as a result of his severe abuse.
Which, if true, is truly horrible.
Right?
Yeah.
People felt that he kept too close of an eye on Victoria, almost to the point of obsession. There was also a rumor going around town that Andreas and his daughter Victoria were having an incestuous relationship, and that Joseph, her son, was the result of this relationship. Apparently, this was actually documented, as they were both arrested for incest in 1915. The two were caught together in the barn by the maid, so gossip spread quickly around that time.
Yeah.
Victoria ended up serving 1 month in prison for this, and Andreas was sent away for a year.
Yeah, and I feel like this was not, they say like relationship, but mm-hmm. I don't think it was a consensual relationship in any way, you know? And if it was like the manipulation of the father to be in this incestuous like time, you know?
Exactly. And yeah. around this time, like, she was still a teenager.
Yeah, and she was like 15 or 16, right?
Yeah, and yeah. so in today's age, that would definitely be considered rape, not yeah. only an incestuous relationship,
right?
But in Germany in the 1915,
yeah,
times are different.
Right.
So despite this relationship between them being notated, it's still unclear if Joseph was Andreas's son, as Victoria also had another relationship with a man named Lorenz, and there was talk that he was the father.
Yeah, everybody in town was talking up a storm about this family.
Exactly.
Everything in their life, other than, you know, the incest,
right.
Was pretty typical until the family started noticing strange happenings around the home. 6 months before there was an attack, the family maid quit because she said that she was hearing voices and believed that the house was haunted. She said that she heard footsteps around the house and felt like she was always being watched. And at the time, I'm pretty sure the family was like, okay, well, our maid is crazy. but maybe she wasn't. He found a strange newspaper from Munich on his property in March of 1922, and Andreas couldn't remember buying it, so he believed that the postman must have just, like, left it behind or something.
Yeah, because I don't think there were, like, people delivering newspapers back then. You had to go to the city and buy it.
Yeah, and there's not a ton of information on exactly, like, why this specific newspaper was weird. Like, we don't know if it was just another random city or if it was, like, you know, a newspaper from, like, 2020 Florida. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. They well, never said what it was, just that it was unexpected it to be in that area.
Yeah, because if it was from Munich, Munich is, like, I think they said it was, like, 40 miles away or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I get not being in the area. Like, it's kind of weird to have a newspaper from a town, yeah, like, pretty far away.
Yeah. A set of keys also went missing from the home, and they supposedly only had two sets to begin with, which I think is silly.
Yeah. There's a lot of people.
Yeah. And one day, Andreas was looking around his property after a snowstorm when he noticed that there were footprints leading up to his tool shed from the forest, but no footsteps leading back. And at the time, there was still snow on the ground, so the steps should have been noticeable. He asked everyone in his family if the tracks belonged to them, but everyone said that it hadn't been them. The tool shed's lock had also been tampered with, but he didn't pay too much mind to it, as he eventually just, like, kind of forgot. Later in that same evening, Andreas felt that he heard footsteps up in the attic, but when he went searching, he was unable to find anyone in the building. And he told several acquaintances and neighbors about all of these weird occurrences, but he did not report them to the police. And one of his neighbors even offered to lend him their gun for protection, but he declined the offer, feeling that he was just worrying too much about the happenings.
On Friday, March 31st, 1922, their new maid, Maria Baumgartner, arrived at the farm. Her sister escorted her there and left after a short stay, and she is most likely the last person to see the family alive. Besides the killer.
Yeah.
It appears that late in the evening, the family was slowly lured into the family barn through the stable, where they were murdered one at a time. Andreas and Cazilia were lured first, and then Victoria and her daughter. It was believed that they were lured around evening time, because some of the family were already in their pajamas and some were still in regular clothes. The murderer used a mattock, which is kind of similar to, like, a pickaxe, that belonged to the family and killed them with blows to the head. After this, the perpetrator moved inside the home, where they used the same weapon to murder the baby,
yeah,
2-year-old Joseph, who was sleeping in his bassinet, as well as the new maid, Maria, who was asleep in her bedchamber. And her belongings weren't even unpacked yet. Like, it was the day she got there.
Mm-hmm.
4 days passed before the family was discovered. On April 1st, coffee sellers Hans Servatsky and
Edward
Servatsky arrived in Hinterkaifeck to place an order with them. They knocked on the doors and windows, and when they got no response, they walked into the yard but were unable to find anyone. They noticed that the gate to the machine house was open, but decided to leave. Cazilia was absent from school for the next few days without an excuse, and the family didn't show up on Sunday to worship. And Victoria was a member of the choir at the church, so it was really strange that she hadn't shown up.
Mm-hmm. The postman also noticed that mail was piling up in their box, which was unusual for the family. They usually came and got it pretty regularly. And Albert Hofner went to the farm on April 4th to repair the engine of the food chopper. He said that he had not seen any of the family, and the only noises he heard were farm animals and their dog barking. After waiting around for an hour or so for someone to show up, he decided to start his repair, which took him about 4.5 hours to complete. Around 3:30 that afternoon, another man, Lorenz Schlittenbauer, sent his son Johann, 16, and stepson Joseph, 9, to the farm to see if they could reach the family. They came back and reported that they were unable to, like, see anybody, and it was super quiet. So Schlittenbauer got two other neighbors and went to the farm himself. He entered the barn to find the bodies of the family and then went into the home to find the fate of the rest of the family. And after this, he called the police. And just a weird fact is that the bodies in the barn had been stacked up on top of one another, and then their heads had been covered with hay.
Mm-hmm.
So just a weird thing.
Yeah, like that had to have been deliberately done.
Yeah, for sure.
An investigation began immediately into the brutal crime by the Munich Police Department. The initial crime scene was hampered by the amount of people who had interacted with the crime scene. They moved the bodies and other items around, and like some people, just like neighbors and onlookers, even cooked and ate meals in the kitchen of this home.
Yeah, disrespectful as hell.
Oh, yeah. The day after the bodies were discovered, the autopsies were performed in the barn. It was established that a mattock was probably used in the crime, but the weapon wasn't there at the scene. And this weapon actually wouldn't be found for another year when the house ended up being demolished. So the autopsy showed the elder Kazelia had 7 blows to the head. Andreas's face was smashed in, and his cheekbones were protruding out of his face. Mm-hmm. So that's intense.
Yeah.
Victoria's head showed 9 star-shaped wounds on the right side of her face, and she had also been hit with the blunt objects. She was the only one who showed signs of strangulation as well. The younger Kazelia's lower jaw was shattered, and her face and neck were covered in circular wounds. And everyone seemed to die very quickly besides her.
Yeah.
She had tufts of hair torn out, and it was suggested that she had done this to herself.
Yeah, that, like, in her, like, dying moments was mm-hmm. just, like, pulling her hair out, which is so scary and sad to me for some reason. Like, I don't know why.
Yeah, because she was, like, 9 yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, she was
like
so small.
So Joseph, the baby, had 1 heavy blow to the head with the weapon, and his body was covered by one of his mother's skirts. Maria, the maid, had multiple blows on both sides of her head, and her body was covered with a sheet from her bed. The skulls of all of the victims were removed and sent to Munich to be examined. Unfortunately, this was during World War II.
Yeah.
And during the turmoil, the skulls of the family were lost, and the family ended up having to be buried without their heads.
Which just, like, makes it, again, another whole layer of unease, you know?
Yeah, right?
It's just, there's so many weird things to this story. And the amount of, like, anger that is in all of the murders
mm-hmm.
is, like, makes it seem so personal.
Yeah, because, like, a 2-year-old isn't gonna tell on you.
Yeah.
Like,
especially because they were inside the house and everyone else was murdered in the barn away
exactly.
from the house. It just, there was no need, you know?
It was deliberate.
Yeah. The police first suspected the crimes were done as a robbery, so they focused their interrogations on traveling craftsmen, vagrants, and several inhabitants from the surrounding villages. Before the attack, Victoria had actually emptied her bank account and donated some of the money to the church, but the rest of it was not located, so there's just, like, a weird mystery about her stuff. This theory was quickly abandoned when a large amount of money was found in the house, so clearly someone wasn't there to rob it. It was also clear that someone had remained at the farm for several days after the crime, as someone had fed the cattle, eaten the entire supply of bread from the kitchen, the bed had looked recently slept in, and they had recently also cut meat from the pantry, because I don't know why I wouldn't have thought about this, but they just, like, had a slab of fucking salt and meat that they would just shave off. Yep. And I love that. That's so cool. I want a slab of frozen meat that I can just shave off. The dog had also been tied up when he, like, normally roamed free. And some accounts say that the dog was injured and some don't. But good news, the dog lived regardless.
Yes.
So
whoever did this took care of all the animals very well.
Yeah. Neighbors also said that they saw smoke coming from the stove in the evening, so they had assumed that someone had to be home in those 4 days that no one had found the bodies. Mm-hmm. It was believed that whoever had killed the family had been living in the Gruber home for at least 6 months in the attic.
That's the scariest thing. Do you remember when you thought someone lived in your attic because there was a weird crawl space in your closet?
I found out that that's apparently very common in apartments, and, like, most apartments have them as a way for the maintenance guy to get in, but it's also a great way for, like, a fucking person to get inside of your house.
Exactly. Like, I checked all my closets.
But yeah, even, like, my closet now in my new room has a weird little guy in it.
Does it?
Yeah. So, you know, spoopy.
Don't you live in a house?
Yeah.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
But other than, like, the people thinking that someone had lived for, like, 6 months, the police, I lost my place. The police weren't really able to get a clear motive for this crime, so instead they just, like, began making a list of suspects. Throughout the investigation, they pulled in more than 100 suspects, and one was brought in as recently as 1986, which is fucking crazy. But still, the perpetrator has not been located, and the case was officially closed in 1955. So, you know, that's not what you want.
No. So this case also had some strange inconsistencies. An original theory was that the victims were drawn to the barn by restlessness in one of the stables. Later, though, an experiment was done, and you couldn't even hear human screams coming from the barn to the living area. So it was unlikely that the family would have heard the animals being restless and gone out to check like they previously believed.
Yeah.
On the night of the crime, Michael Placco passed the farm, and he was like one of their neighbors, and noticed that the oven had been heated. He said this man walked up to him with a lantern and shone it in his eyes, effectively blinding him, so he just went on his way. He did say that the smell coming from the smoke was disgusting. And this was not a claim that could be backed, as there was no investigation conducted to see if something had been burned in the oven that night. And I saw some places that they said maybe it would be like his clothes or something, stuff like that. On April 1st at 3 a.m., a man named Simon was on his way home when he saw two unknown figures near the edge of the forest. When the strangers spotted him, they turned their faces away from him so they couldn't be seen. And he felt that these men could be involved in some way. In May 1927, a stranger stopped at a resident's home and asked questions about the murder. He then shouted that he was the murderer and fled into the woods, and this guy was never identified. Just like, can you tell me about this?
Yeah.
You know what I feel like?
Yeah.
I feel like it's Angela from The Office where Dwight defends Jim from Roy.
Yeah.
And she goes around and asks everyone what their story is, like, just to get the high from it.
Yeah. Yeah, that one is, that's true. I never thought of it that way. I don't know why, but the way that you say Dwight really is just so specific. You put so much emphasis on the D. You say Dwight. His name is Dwight.
Is it like how I say bagel?
Yeah, it's Dwight.
Dwight.
No, I want to play it back for you right now, but I'm not going to because this is already derailed. But I just, when you said his name like that, that's all I could think of. And then I couldn't hear what else you were saying.
I, like I said, can't even speak English.
Maybe that is how you say it. It's just funny. I don't know. All right. So despite the police never being able to, like, locate who the murderer was, there are several strong suspects and then some suspects that are just funsies.
This first one is just my favorite.
This first one is just so silly that I love it. It's so implausible that yes. I want it to be the correct answer, you know?
Yeah.
And we're a little slap happy because we just went off on that rant. So we're not laughing at dead people. We are laughing because this is just a silly theory. All right. So Carl Gabriel is our first suspect. Carl was Victoria's husband who had reportedly been killed in Arras, France during the First World War in 1914. But his body had never been recovered and was not, like, sent home to be buried. After these murders, people began speculating if Carl had actually died in the war or not. Soldiers that worked with him say that they watched him die with their own eyes and that this yeah. is crazy, but the theory, like, still stands.
I literally saw him right there. Yeah. He was not alive.
The theory is that Carl was so angry that Victoria would have a child with another man that he came back and committed this gruesome murder. Yes. And then, in an entirely separate world war, after the second one, some war captives were released from Soviet captivity early. And one of these captains claimed to be the murderer of the farm. And many theorize that this man was Carl Gabriel. Again, all of this is incredibly unlikely, but it's still a fun theory nonetheless.
So the next one, which is my personal favorite. I don't know if it's yours.
Yeah, this is definitely who did it.
Oh, yeah.
Allegedly. Definitely allegedly yeah, who did it.
He's dead. It's fine.
I know, but still, like, his family could come after me. I don't know. They're not listening to this, but could be.
So the next person is Lorenz Schlittenbauer. Name sound familiar? It's the guys who found the body.
Yeah, the guy who inserted himself into the investigation to discover the bodies. How weird and not right? suspicious at all, Lorenz.
So Lorenz's wife passed away in 1918. And it was rumored that soon after he began a relationship with Victoria Gabriel and that he was her son Joseph's father. A lot of people think that this is plausible because the initials LS are on the birth certificate, but it also could have been the attending doctor's initials. Lorenz claimed that he was not the father, but despite this, he still had to pay child support to Victoria. And Lorenz and Andreas got into arguments about who the father was of Joseph.
Yeah.
And one got so heated that Andreas ended up threatening him with a scythe.
Yeah, which is a very hardcore threat, sir.
Right?
Yeah.
Are you the Grim Reaper?
Honestly.
He came under suspicion pretty early on because some of suspicious things that he did after the bodies were discovered.
Yeah.
First off, he was the one who unstacked all the bodies that were in the barn.
Yeah.
The other men who were there with him were, like, really shaken and thought it was strange that Lorenz was just able to touch dead bodies and start moving them around. But when they asked him what he was doing, he responded, "I'm looking for my son," talking about Joseph.
Yeah. Which I think is a weird thing to say for a guy who isn't his son.
Yeah.
You know?
Who's like, no, no, no.
I'm not, or isn't his father, rather.
So when him and his friends came to investigate, they had to break a gate in order to enter the barn because all the doors were locked. But after finding the bodies, he entered the house through the barn entrance.
Yeah.
So this meant that he knew that the barns were connected to the homestead, which most people didn't know.
Yeah, they only knew that if they, like, worked there.
Yeah, and, like, it was said that when they had their little fling, he had only been to the house, like, once or twice.
Yeah.
And it's also suspicious because the home was locked, and suddenly the door was open with the key inside the door.
Yeah.
And because the key had previously gone missing, a lot of people pointed towards him as having the key or stealing it from being Victoria's lover.
Yeah.
The maid's quarters also had a door handle that was pretty unusual. Like, rather than pushing it down, you had to pull it up to get it open. And Lorenz just walked right up to the door and immediately opened it the correct way. Like, he just casually walked in. He knew what he was doing. And again, this could be from knowing the home when he dated Victoria, or could be because he's the murderer, allegedly.
Yeah. Because apparently, like, the other doorknobs in the house weren't like this, and the maid's quarter is just like, you know how you have that weird door where you have to, like, pull it a little harder to get it to lock or something? Like, it was just that door for the family.
Lorenz also had no real great alibi for the night.
Yeah.
And his family said that he spent the night in the family barn to watch out for burglars.
Which is a terrible fucking alibi. I don't know, sir.
Yeah.
What were you thinking when you gave that one?
Years after the murders, Lorenz was also known to make weird comments about the crime that only really the murderer would know.
Yeah.
Before he passed away in 1941, he made several civil claims for slander against people who called him the murderer of Hinterkaifeck, and he won several of these.
Yeah. So the next set of suspects are Carl and Andreas S. In 1971, a woman named Therese wrote a letter about an event she claimed occurred when she was 12. She said that one day her mother got a visitor from the mother of brothers Carl and Andreas. This woman claimed that her sons were the killers of Hinterkaifeck and that Andreas had lost his penknife while the attack was happening. When the farm was demolished in 1923, a penknife was found, but it is unknown if it belonged to the perpetrator or one of the victims. The former maid was certain that she had already seen this penknife in the yard while she worked there. So, again, it's like they worked on a farm. It could just be a tool that was there.
Yeah. So, the next set of suspects are the Beechler brothers and George Siegel. It may also be Beekler brothers, depending on, I don't know how to speak German.
Yeah. Depending on, I don't know how to speak German. Yeah.
So, the former maid, Riegler, who quit about 6 months prior to the killings, suspected brothers Anton and Carl Beechler committed the murders. Anton had helped with the potato harvest in the past, so he knew the premises. And Riegler said that Anton often talked about the family and how they ought to be dead.
Yeah.
She also emphasized that the family dog barked at everyone, but not at Anton, so he could get by unnoticed.
Yeah.
Fun fact, because we're all wondering what kind of dog they had. They had a Pomeranian.
Yeah.
But apparently, there wasn't all this genetic testing and stuff meshing of the dogs. And Pomeranians were, like, bigger and stockier back then.
Yeah. I still like to picture just, like, this tiny fucking Pomeranian just, like, barking at their homestead. But I know that it's not.
I don't know what kind of dog it is, but have you seen the picture of, like, the dog that's really poofy and kind of looks like a big version of a Pomeranian?
Like a Chow Chow?
Yes. Yeah. Like a Chow. That I feel like that's what I'm picturing in my head.
Yeah, that's what I'm picturing, too. But I don't know if it's accurate or not.
Yeah. So Riegler felt that the brothers, along with George, decided to commit the murders to get the family fortune.
Yeah.
Supposedly, George had broken into the home before in November of 1920 and stole a number of items, but he also denies that this happened.
Also, if they were there to steal the family fortune, they did a terrible fucking job at it.
Yeah,
you know?
Because, like, nothing really seemed to be ransacked. There was just a little bit of stuff taken.
Yeah.
George also admitted that he was the person who had carved the handle of the murder weapon when he worked on the farm, and he would have known where the tools were kept and stuff like that.
Yeah. So he, like, admitted that, yeah, all of that is true, but I still didn't do the murders, basically. So I still, Lorenz is my favorite guy so far. But we have one more. So, Paul Mueller was named as a possible suspect in a book by Bill James titled The Man from the Train. Paul's crimes occurred across the United States between 1898 and 1912. He was known to target isolated homes near small railroad towns and would bludgeon the families to death with the blunt end of an axe, which is what a Maddox is, basically. And it was believed that his crimes were motivated by a sadistic and necrophilic attraction to prepubescent girls, which there was a prepubescent girl who was murdered type thing. And these similarities stood out, and people felt that he may have fled the U.S. in 1912 back to Germany in order to flee after murdering two families in a single night. Students of a German police academy say that after looking at the case using modern techniques, that they have actually eliminated all suspects except for one. And they refuse to release this information to the public as the suspect is already dead, and they feel that it is important to protect the privacy of the remaining living family. So, all in all, it's still unsolved, but did we potentially solve it, question mark?
Yeah, I mean, like, just looking at the evidence, like, he had a relationship with Victoria, he had bad blood with the whole family. Victoria is the only one who is strangled.
Yeah.
Like,
he had the motive for sure because he was saying that he wasn't the father of Joseph and then had to pay child support and all of that stuff and was mad about it. So it feels like he was just mad that he had to do this and was, like, annoyed at all of it. And
yeah. Didn't have an alibi.
Yeah, and it makes to me the most sense as to why someone would still be on the premises of the house, you know, because like he lived pretty nearby. He lived like, I think, 340 meters or something, which is like four farms. Like, that's your neighbor, you know. So I feel like that makes more sense than someone living in the attic for 6 months, but it could have happened, you know, like, because there were also signs of that around the house, too. So who knows?
Yeah. And like the only thing that's kind of weird is him going through the bodies in the barn saying, I'm looking for my son. But obviously it could have been an act because the people that he was with. Said that he didn't seem like frantic.
Yeah.
He was more like stoic and calm and like could have been in shock, but you don't know how people are going to react, but they kind of thought that it was weird and maybe he was putting on a front or whatever, like trying to be like, oh, I'm looking for my son, but in reality he may have done it.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And it's creepy. Like, the whole footsteps leading up to the house but never leaving is just so creepy. The idea of someone potentially living in the attic for 6 months, very creepy. Just, I don't like it at all.
Yeah, like, I don't know if there was someone in the attic for 6 months, but I definitely think that someone, like, spent a little bit of time in the attic. Because they heard so much, like, footsteps and noises yeah. and stuff like that.
The reason they think it's 6 months is because that maid left 6 months before mm-hmm. citing footsteps and stuff as her reason for
Very
leaving.
True.
So they were like, they had to have been there when the maid was there type yeah. thing. Or the maid was just hearing ghosts. It's 1912 Germany. I'm sure your shit has ghosts, you know?
Yeah.
Everybody's got ghosts. But, yeah. I don't know. I think these are always super fun and interesting. Like, these older crimes.
Especially, like, when they're unsolved.
Yeah.
Like, I love the Axemen of New Orleans. Yeah. I love that one.
We'll never know exactly who did it. We'll never have the answers because everyone involved is dead now.
Yep.
So that's crazy. But we hope that you guys enjoyed this week's episode. Again, it was a bit of a shorter one, but we're gonna bring you a bigger listener request story next week, so get fucking prepped, my guys.
Honestly, it's it's a lot.
Yeah, it's gonna be a juicy one, so be prepared to come in next week swanging.
I have to be prepared coming in next week swinging. But we will be back in America next week with our story.
Yes, so look forward to that one. Make sure that you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, let us know who you think was the perpetrator of this crime.
Exactly. And please do that because it's like the biggest thing that can help us grow and like reach new people and stuff. Mm-hmm. But also check us out on social media where you can find us at Crime Binge or Crime Binge Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And you can also check out our website at crimebinge.com where you can check out stuff about every episode, see our sources, and also leave us a submission for who you would like to see us do in the future.
Yeah. And keep on binging.
Bye.
See ya.